Hello and welcome to MacBytes episode 189. I'm Elaine Giles and I'm here with my co-host Mike Thomas. In this episode, Timmy's travels, tech tantrums and text taming tortoises. Guess who was first in the comments after the last show? Go on, have a guess. Jammy, who said, I'm going to be as famous as the orange toilet brush at this rate. OMG, I have just had an epiphany. The orange one. Clearly the Don was the inspiration for the cosmic orange iPhone 17. We know how much Timmy thinks of the Don. It's the ultimate tribute. Mind officially blown. Well, I recover from that one. Let's get back to Jammy. I've not dared any of the major OS updates yet. I'm worried my phone battery will start to slog, that my ornamental iPad will run into issues with my art apps, and that my desktop will, well, die. The fact that it ruins Scrivener's compile is reason enough on its own not to bother. Totally agree. Not broken. I use Obsidian 2, less so than Scrivener, but I still love it. It's my go-to for random notes and ideas when I'm not at my machine. I'll pop the note in my phone and pull it through to my desktop later. And TextSniper is another utility I bought as a consequence of MacBytes After Hours, and it came in very useful for when I was wanting to capture uni slides online on the occasions they didn't provide the slides after. That is what I use it for all the time in online sessions. They often put the agenda up as a slide, and obviously you can't capture that other than an image, and I want to put it in my notes. So excellent use. He goes on. I've not done the survey yet because I want to select all the options and I can't. I'm still deciding which to prioritise for the top three. Wonderful show as always, folks. Looking forward to the next one. Well, we're a day late, but not a dollar short. No, we've had a bit of a busy week, but this show is going to be released on International Podcast Day. So happy International Podcast Day. We'll pretend that that was all intentional. But actually, we've just had a bit of a busy week. Anyway, I am glad to report that Jammy did manage to complete the survey, despite wanting to select all seven options. And trust me, you weren't alone struggling. That was the number one comment we heard. More on the survey results later. Great to hear from you, Jammy. Now, guess what was in the news this week? The gate! As sure as September marks the arrival of a new iPhone marks the arrival of a new gate. Remember Bumpergate, Beardgate, and the 2025 edition, Scratchgate. It appears that the blue and black versions are particularly susceptible to scratches. Lots of photos appearing on social to prove the point. But I was shocked. No, not about the scratches. I was shocked anyone ever tries using an iPhone without a case. Not that I don't trust Apple. But no matter how much they tell us that the iPhone is made from the most scratch-resistant material on the planet, I still buy a case. Usually the case arrives before the iPhone. I unbox the phone and it goes straight into the case. Doesn't everyone do that? Apparently not. I'm sure we've seen all this before. I'm thinking the iPhone 7 in piano black. Who remembers that one? Mine was in a case almost before the unboxing. So I hate to say, but that's an expected gate, that one, definitely. But wait, what's better than one gate? Two, of course. And three is even better. So in addition to Scratchgate, we now have Wi-Fi gate and CarPlay gate. Apparently, grief comes in threes these days. Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity problems appear to be the cause of both of these issues. It's thought the next point update will solve the issues. Which begs the question, why was there an issue in the initial release? Surely it's basic stuff. It's not some hidden idiosyncratic feature. If the phone loses Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, you're going to notice. You've just spent over £1,000 on a new tech toy. You are not going to be happy if it isn't working as well as the old tech toy did. So, what else did we have in the news this week? Oh, you might want to sit down for this one. I know I did. Only the story of the week. The King last week, the Don the week before, and this week, who was Timmy schmoozing this week? Pikachu. For the uninitiated, that's a Pokemon character. Not a reserved handshake thing, like with the king, either. Oh, no, no. This was a full-on cuddle for the creature it was. And would that it had stopped there. Needless to say, it didn't. Timmy also met Japanese boy band Number I. No news of whether that involved physical contact of a dubious nature. But before long, it was back to gaming when he visited Bandai Namco to play iOS game Dragon Ball Gekishin Squadra. I'm not going to try that again. Which sounds like something us games-phobic folks should probably avoid. I have questions here, lots of them. Does Timmy ever do any work? No wonder my last computer was on 7-week back order. They must have been waiting for him to show up at the office to personally authorise dispatch. And that only leaves one question. Where will Timmy be next week? We need a spot the ball style competition. Pin Timmy on a world map. Spot the Timmy. Obviously, this week, the winner would have picked Japan. But now over to Mike with some shocking news about updating apps. Yes, I was surprised too.
I know I'm well known for not keeping my devices up to date. I've actually got 70 apps needing to be updated on my phone right now. And I know we always hold off updating macOS. But one app or set of apps that I always keep up to date is Microsoft Office. When I say always, I might be a point release or a point release behind, but generally I'm in the ballpark. Well, it was whilst doing an Office update last week that I learned something. Microsoft Office only supports the latest three Mac OSs. And with the release of Tahoe, that's Tahoe, Sequoia and Sonoma, which wouldn't be a problem, except that my 2017 iMac can only go up to Ventura, otherwise known as macOS 13. For those of you, like me, who can't keep up with names and numbers, Ventura was the one before Sonoma, which means it's the fourth latest macOS. You know, there's been 17 OSs since we started using a Mac. I've found a list of them on a page on the SetApp website, and I've put a link to it in the show notes. I can remember the first few, Leopard, Snow Leopard, and Lion, but at some point it just becomes a blur, both names and numbers. And one I always forget is El Capitan. I'm not even sure if I ever installed it. Anyway, I digress. What Microsoft means by supporting the latest three versions of the OS is that Office will still run, it just can't be updated. So it looks like I'm stuck on 16 point something forever on that iMac. Last week, a client emailed me with an issue they had with Excel. He's on a Mac, and as well as describing his problem, he told me he'd just updated his Mac to Tahoe. I did choose not to commiserate with him. I don't think he's a Mac geek like we are. He'd also updated Excel to the latest version. In fact, his problem, whatever it was, only started when he updated Excel. And that was the day before he mailed me. My first thought was, I'll look at your Excel problem, but I'm not updating to Tahoe. What I did do, though, was update Excel so it matched the version that he had. Or at least, that was my plan. When I hit the update button in the Office Update dialog, that's the one that exposed my Silverlight problem that I talked about a couple of weeks ago, I got a message that said, OS upgrade required. You need macOS 14 or later to run this version of Office. And as I said, I can't update that Mac to macOS 14 Sonoma. Luckily, my other iMac is on Sequoia. That's the one after Sonoma. So I updated Excel on that Mac, but I couldn't replicate his problem. I mailed the client and I told him that I couldn't replicate the problem. He mailed me back and told me that when he downgraded to the previous version of Excel, the problem went away. I'm wondering if it's an incompatibility between that version of Excel and Tahoe. I know, sounds odd, but who knows?
I always wonder what the logic is behind a decision to kill support for older operating systems. I know new features in more modern operating systems can be new and shiny, especially for the developers. But Apple hardware usually lasts longer than does the software it can support. Dropbox sent me a mail this week. I nearly choked on my teeth when I read it. I will admit I hadn't read it properly at this point. Once I had, it wasn't actually as bad as it could have been, but still potentially not good news for those with older hardware. The mail informed me that they were limiting support for macOS 10.13 to 10.15. My choking was when I misread that as macOS 15. In other words, Sequoia. Read more slowly, woman. Not much notice either, because this deprecation starts in October. Unless you update your OS, which presupposes your kit will take it, you will be automatically switched to a lighter version of Dropbox. It's a nice way of putting it, isn't it? A lighter version. What does a lighter version mean? Well, think fewer features. Core features like syncing and sharing files will be available, but some advanced desktop options will no longer be available. If you're wondering what those features are, so was I. I investigated. Features include the ability to set up a new computer, configuring external drive backups, adjusting backup settings, restoring backup content from your desktop, I'd have thought that one was critical, and getting guided help with sync issues or managing storage through the Manage Hard Drive Space panel. And then a very weird one, I thought. Adding text shapes or drawings to screenshots before you share them. I'd imagine you'd be more than a little annoyed if your hardware was working well, but just couldn't be upgraded to a supported OS just for Dropbox to continue working. All of which got me thinking even more. How soon is too soon to bin support? My thinking and Dropbox's thinking don't seem to be aligned on this. I recall when the BBC unilaterally decided to stop the iPlayer from working on iPad 1. I think iPad 3 or 4 was out by this stage. But muggles don't update their iPad every iteration. I mean, good grief, I don't update my iPad every iteration anymore. People are far more likely to update their phone than their iPad. And I was still using iPad 1 for consuming content, yes, via the iPlayer. So the impact of this was to render it a brick. Perfectly good hardware, but at the mercy of apps. What are your thoughts? Let us know. How soon is too soon for you? Now, I don't know whether this next one falls under hardware or software, but I can confirm it definitely falls under annoying. For the first time in 9 years of wearing an Apple Watch, it issued a password demand. It demanded that I log in to my Apple ID on the watch. It even displayed a dinky little keyboard. You'd have needed a microscope to see the keys, but it was definitely a keyboard. I ignored it at first. It got more insistent with each passing day, until there was no ignoring it. OK, I thought, let's do it. Big mistake. There was no chance of typing anything other than random hieroglyphics. Meanwhile, Mike was telling me that I could use an iPad keyboard. How did you know that, I wondered. I'd forgotten that the iPad on your desk was mine. I know you use it to monitor the CCTV. And there was hope, right there. I grabbed one of my other iPads and wafted my watch at it. Eventually, I too received permission to use my iPad keyboard to enter my password. When researching later, I did find some poor lost soul on the Apple support forums trying to enter their password using Scribble. A few questions sprang to mind immediately, the first one of which was, why? Why would you do that? After a long series of failed attempts, he declared it was impossible, something I would have deemed self-evident before even bothering to get my index finger out. I have no idea why the Apple Watch suddenly became so demanding in the password department, but if yours does the same thing, the trick to using the iPad or your iPhone as a surrogate keyboard is proximity. Get up close and personal with it. Our focus today is Drafts, an app that I use every day. Drafts first appeared in 2012. It's made by a company called Agile Tortoise, and it was born out of frustration. There's a lot of apps born out of frustration, isn't there? I find a lot of solutions I create are born out of frustration. Well, Greg Pierce, the developer, was writing an email to his wife, and halfway through he decided it needed to be sent as a text message. And so would have ensued a long-winded process of copying the text, switching apps, and pasting the content into place. And that made him realise this was a major point of friction in iOS. That was the initial problem that Drafts was designed to solve. So the original iOS release in 2012 just had basic text capture and limited actions. iPad support was added a little later, and with it came enhanced capabilities. By April 2018, Drafts 5 launched as a complete rewrite, and this introduced a subscription model and significantly expanded features. I find it hard to believe at that stage because I do remember buying all the versions of it since 2012. But the bit I find hard to believe was at that stage there was no Mac version. The Mac version didn't arrive until 2019. It was then that we had a true cross-platform synchronization, which was a game changer. At one level, Drafts can be used in a very basic way, but if you choose to configure a few options, it becomes a powerhouse of text management. The Pro subscription is completely optional, so everything that Mike's going to talk about today is available without any kind of subscription at all, completely free.
In true Mike style, this is a how I use the app rather than a full app review. So, how do I use it? Basic use is how I describe it. I mainly use it on the Mac and I really just use it as a roughbook, somewhere to type text that will eventually be copied and pasted elsewhere. For example, I need to send a support ticket to insert company name here. Rather than typing straight into an email or a web form, I start a new draft. A draft is basically a note in Drafts, and I type what I want to say into that note, and then copy and paste it into the email or the web form. Another example, I need to send a text message or WhatsApp message. It could be support related, it could be something else. Like when we were running the Catenian Circle and we had to make the decision to cancel events due to COVID. The danger of typing directly into a mail client or WhatsApp or messages is that it's too easy to press enter and send a half-finished message. Yes, I could open a text editor and type it in there, but what if I'd wanted to sleep on it and send it the next day? I'd have to save it and find the text file again the next day. With Drafts, it gets saved automatically and synced to the cloud. And there's no searching around for individual text files. Everything is in one app. Once the text message or email or support ticket is sent, there's no need to keep the draft, so it gets deleted. Well, that's the idea. Having looked at my drafts whilst prepping this piece, it's in need of some serious triaging, and I've only got the grand total of 24 notes in there. There's a couple of old support tickets. I don't need those anymore. If I want to keep a record of what was sent, I should really cut and paste to Obsidian. So, what's in my drafts apart from those old support tickets? I picked out a few of the highlights for you. The oldest note is a block of HTML code for the chat box embedded in MacBytes FM. That should probably be moved to a note in Obsidian in my tech folder. Next note, and I'm working from the bottom up here, installation and configuration notes for the Candles plugin on the church website. That was the priest's idea. No, not installing a plugin. At the start of COVID, he wanted a way for people to light a virtual candle for people who had passed away or who were ill, or just to say thinking of you whilst the world is going through this difficult time. So I found this WordPress plugin. It's not been updated for 9 years, but it does still work. You'll be glad to know, by the way, I'm not going to go through every note. Even with 24, we'd still be here all day. But this is an interesting one. Where should this live? Drafts? Obsidian? Somewhere else? It's a boilerplate email reply to anyone who emails about the Munich air crash anniversary event, the one that takes place every February in Munich. We get a lot of people asking what time the event starts, do they need tickets, can we recommend any hotels, etc. So I just copy and paste the text as a reply. So where should that live?
Depends on how you use it. Typeinator, maybe Raycast Snippets would be a good place, because that would make it easy to use. That assumes you're only using it on macOS. If you use it on mobile, then I'd say leave it in Drafts. To make it easy to use, you could add an action that copies it to the clipboard without you having to select the text first.
Oh, this was a good one. My Blue Sky username and a password. And no, it's not my Blue Sky account. I checked one password. No title, no notes, just a username and a password. That one got deleted whilst I was prepping this piece. Next one, one note with nothing but two URLs. No accompanying text, but looking at the URLs, they are both links to recipes for Mississippi mud pie. There's a quiz on TV. I know we don't watch much TV, but there is a quiz that we watch called Pointless, and one of the answers a few weeks ago was Mississippi mud pie. And that set me off. I must have been lying in bed one night, on my phone, not lying on my phone in bed, looking at Mississippi mud pie recipes. It was in that downtime period, you know, when you're in bed and you're trying to get your brain to switch off before sleep. I was just surfing the web, looking at things that don't need much brain power. In other words, non-Excel things. And I just copied and pasted them into Drafts, them being these two URLs. That's probably one of the main things that I use Drafts for. Copying URLs. That example was copying from a browser on the phone to Drafts on the phone. I guess my intention was to put the links into Obsidian, into my recipes folder. I just never got around to it. I have another note with nothing but a URL. I know exactly why I did this. It was only last week. I wanted to test the waitlist page for my new course in a browser or mobile. So I copied the URL to Drafts. Drafts syncs across devices. So on my phone, I can tap the link and see what the page looks like. Now, you're probably thinking, why don't you just use Apple Notes? And I wouldn't blame you. For my basic use case, typing text and copying elsewhere, Apple Notes would do the job. But here's where Drafts gets interesting. It's all about actions. Think of actions as little automations that can do things with your text. Want to tweet something? There's an action for that. Need to append text to a specific note in Obsidian? Action. Send a text message without opening messages. You guessed it? Action. The free version gives you a taste. You get some basic actions. But if you want to unlock the full power, you'll need Drafts Pro, which costs £17.49 a year. Now, I'm still on the free version because, let's be honest, I'm basically using this app as a slightly fancier notepad. It's like buying a Ferrari and only driving it to the corner shop. But the potential is there. Apple Notes? Well, it just sits there looking pretty. It's got folders, it's got formatting and all that jazz, but it can't do anything with your text. Drafts treats your text as data that can be manipulated. Apple Notes treats it as, well, notes. The other big difference, Drafts start with a blank page every time. It's designed for quick capture, not long-term storage. Apple Notes wants you to file everything away properly, which explains why I've got 24 random notes cluttering up my drafts. I'm using it all wrong, basically.
Nothing new there, then.
But, as I've said before, sometimes using things wrong is exactly right for what you need. So, that's it. How I use Drafts with my grand total of 24 notes.
So following on from Mike's overview of how he uses Drafts, I'll share how I use it. I'm betting 95% of the features that I'll mention will come as a complete revelation to Mike. So prepare to be blown away. Now, while Drafts started from that simple single idea, where text starts, it is way beyond that now. In terms of platforms it's supported on, yes, it did start on iOS, but it's now available for the iPhone, the iPad, the Apple Watch, iMessage and macOS. And for me, it really is where text starts. Everything from brief information I need to reference for a short time. I clearly remember using it when we went out to a formal dinner at a golf club. Everything was absolutely fine until we came to rescue the car from the car park and discovered a code was required. I got the code from the concierge, entered it into Drafts, and then read it out to Mike once we got to the gate. Obviously, that's not something I need to save. It wouldn't have made any sense to me to put that in my main notes app. I would have then had to have remembered to delete it later, or stumbled across it 6 months later and wondered what it was. So, text I need to reference for a short time. To URLs or content that I need on another device. In that way, my use is similar to Mike's, but Drafts can do so much more than that. Each draft can be text, it can be markdown, it can be whatever you're comfortable writing in. That doesn't mean that your notes need to stay in that format. More on that later when we look at actions. Now, markdown gives you text superpowers. You can create to-do items, bold and italic formatting, strike-through, bullet points, numbered lists, URL links and wiki-style links. Where it shines for me is the quick capture. I use the quick capture window on macOS multiple times a day. I bring that up with a quick shortcut key, enter what I want. I either leave it on the screen while I'm referencing it, or if I decide that I do want to keep it a little bit longer in drafts, I click a button at the bottom and it automatically adds it straight to drafts. While we're still talking about quick capture, you can also capture on the Apple Watch, which I have been known to do on occasions talking to it. There's widgets available as well. Not only can you capture with the widgets, but you can actually open drafts to specific tags or notes, however you choose to work. You can create a watch folder in iCloud. Not something I've tried myself. No, iCloud. Leave it alone. You can even quick capture from a specific list in Apple Reminders. So if you use Apple Reminders, you can have a list that automatically sends text through to drafts. If you have a pro subscription, you can even mail drafts yourself using a feature called Mail Drop. There's also a clipper for capturing from browsers, which came as a complete revelation to me. Wasn't aware of that one. Don't use it. Is it something I should try? Well, I've not needed it up to now. It's not anything that I've ever thought, oh, I wish I could capture that. Next up is organization. And the first thing I'll look at is locations. Now, there's no concept of notebooks or stacks, as you'd find in apps like Evernote. The only separate locations or groups are the inbox, the flagged view, the archive, all view, and the bin, which might sound a bit limiting, but it's not. Because moving on from locations, we have tags. Each individual draft can be tagged with either a single tag or multiple tags. And this is the primary way to organize drafts. Tags can be nested, and that gives you structure. It might sound limiting, but the tags come into their own when you link them with the Workspaces feature. Now, Workspaces are all about what notes you want to see. You can create complex queries based on tags, locations, and much more. These are then saved, and they can be applied from a drop-down menu within the app. Now, I know some people who have built whole mini applications. Think a cut down version of Scrivener for their blog content. And that's all about viewing your notes. Workspaces, however, are a pro feature. Now, actions are all about what you want to do with your notes. Drafts provides integration with literally hundreds of apps and services. You can send social posts directly from Drafts. You can add text to existing drafts. It's great for adding pre-configured tags to social posts that you've written. There's a directory of actions that you're able to download. So in our testing, Actions is marked as one of the pro features. I wanted to check if I could create some actions and share them with Mike, who doesn't have a pro subscription. Yes, that worked. However, but Mike was also able to create actions as well as import them, which came as a surprise to both of us. It was clearly marked as being a pro feature, but it was available. So it could be that they've changed that and not changed the interface. Now, everything is configurable. Literally, everything about the draft interface can be customized. Not just globally, but on a language-by-language basis. You are able to edit the interface. You're able to change the color coding, the width of the text, whether line numbers are shown or not, what fonts used, you name it. What is interesting is that I have it in dark mode and Mike has it in light mode. And when I see his on his desktop, whoa, it looks different. Now, notes can be transferred to numerous other applications, services, or locations, either in their existing format or, and this is the clever bit, in a range of other formats. So let's say you have a note in Markdown format. That note can be previewed in and copied out of drafts as HTML or RTF, for example. And as you're working, Drafts is automatically creating versions of your notes. These versions can be viewed in a dedicated window. They're also able to be restored whenever you need to enable you to roll back to a previous version. Versions can be deleted so you don't leave a trail. Think of that I'm going to resign letter that you wish you'd never written, that. And there's also extensive options for maintaining your notes. You can remove excess versions. You can clean the action log. You can reinstall the default actions if you've taken your customizations a little bit too far. You can purge the sync transactions. And the reason for doing that is it would speed up the sync. You can also rebuild the tag cache. There's lots and lots of other features. There's Markdown Preview, integration with shortcuts on the your OS, location and version history, syntax highlighting, and it integrates with Handoff and Spotlight. Now, Mike's use was limited to the free version. Some of the features I've talked about are part of the £17.49 a year or £1.99 a month subscription. To be honest, it's a subscription that's worth every penny if you have more than a handful of notes. Highly, highly recommend Drafts. Now, you remember when Jamie mentioned he captured quick notes on his phone into Obsidian. Now, obviously, I use Obsidian. Why aren't I capturing quick notes into Obsidian? And the reason for that is Drafts is faster. So Drafts is just another level for me. I treat Drafts as my text-based inbox. For something to get into Obsidian, it has to have more value than the value it has to get into Drafts. So I'm triaging in Drafts before I send things through to Obsidian. But as I say, fantastic app, absolutely fantastic. Now, another app that was just as critical in my workflow as Drafts still is, was Bartender. For over 10 years, it was one of the first apps I installed on a new Mac. Bartender was a must-have app when it launched in 2012. It was developed by Ben Surtees. Its job, a seemingly simple one that Apple had ignored for years. All it did was manage your menu bar icons. It allowed you to hide those that were unneeded, either completely or until you wanted to see or use them. Something Apple could and should have provided from day one. But hey ho, I think it's better it came from a third party. And strangely, Apple haven't Sherlocked it. At least, not yet. Since its first appearance back in 2012, Bartender has evolved through 6 versions, each version adding more features and controls. Features like searching, hotkeys, advanced triggers, and all was well until June 2024, which we did mention at the time. And that was when the developer sold the app to a company called Applause. Applause claimed that they were aiming to maintain the app's core values, but the trouble started straight away. It was reported that Applause paid the developer extra to keep the deal private. Why on earth would they need to do that? That I do not understand. Needless to say, that sparked user concern about transparency. It's important in any app, but it's even more important in an app that requires screen recording permission. And the users only discovered about the buyout when a certificate needed updating and Mac Update let the cat out of the bag. That was when I started looking for an alternative, as did many, many others. And I found quite a few. There's an app called Hidden Bar. There's a free app called Vanilla, but I went for an app called Ice. It's donationware with a suggested donation that's the same price as a Bartender license. It works in exactly the same way as Bartender, which makes switching easy. And once I'd configured it, which was back in June 2024, I couldn't tell the difference. Now, like Bartender, who now have a new version out with Tahoe support, Ice has a version that supports Tahoe as well. And it allows you the same control over those menu bar icons that Bartender provided, just without the concerns that you shouldn't have to think about with any software, like wondering what the new owners might be up to. So Ice, like Bartender before it, does one thing and it does it well. It gives you complete control over which icons you have permanently displayed in your menu bar, which you have completely hidden, and which you have available on a click or via a shortcut key. In over a year of use, I've never had a problem with Ice. I did get a mail from Bartender informing me that version 6 was ready for Tahoe. And I thought to myself, isn't it funny how I only hear from them when they want money for an update? Which, not happening, not happening. I wasn't even tempted to read about any new features. Ice does everything I need, without the grief. And I think it's better to support an independent developer than companies who've been involved in some questionable situations. So, my advice, give ICE a try and let me know what you think of it. And in true Apple style, we have one more thing. Really is one thing this time. The Great MacBytes After Hour survey closed last week. Thank you to all who took part, especially for your lovely comments. Here's just a few of them. Excellent and informative programme. I've missed it. Watched for tips, tricks, etc. for the Affinity Suite and found them beyond helpful. I never knew learning could be this entertaining. The quirky twist of each event keeps me coming back for more. Then someone else agreeing with Jammy. Well, three choices was clearly not enough in my humble opinion, as I love it all. Every part mentioned above makes the show so special. There's nothing else like it on the internet. The personal stories plus wonderful content, it's very special. I've learnt so much. And finally, attending the MacBytes After Hours events has been a game changer for me. The sessions are not only informative, but also incredibly fun. So, the votes are in. And, oh, I definitely need a drum roll for this one. A big drum roll. MacBytes After Hours is back on Friday night. I hope you are one of those who have already bought their ticket. Bought your ticket. Yes, MacBytes After Hours now needs a season pass. But for this week only, it's the lowest price it'll ever be. And if you purchase this week, you'll have the enhanced status of being a founder member. So yes, MacBytes After Hours is members only now. Why? Because we're taking YouTube out of the mix. It's either that or no MacBytes After Hours at all, which isn't what you told us you want. We've had a few questions. Windows users wondering if there'll be enough content for them. Windows users, you are most welcome. And yes, there'll be plenty of content that will work for you. Obviously, we will have plenty on Affinity Publisher, Affinity Designer, Affinity Photo. But a lot of the other apps that we use are cross-platform. Eagle, Scrivener, Obsidian, even Raycast is cross-platform these days. Then there's all the online services that are inherently cross-platform. We also had some comments that were less of a question, more of a statement. I'll just wait for the free YouTube version. Don't bother waiting for the free YouTube version. There won't be one. If YouTube want anything other than random, look what you're missing out on content, they've got some serious sucking up to do. Another statement was, I've already watched all your YouTube videos on Affinity Publisher and others. Well, that's great. But the MacBytes After Hours season pass shows, they're not repeats. They are all new demos with all of the latest features. We will be covering features that weren't even in the software when I last ventured near YouTube. It's going to be better than ever because I won't have to fight YouTube. Hopefully, you'll want to support what we're doing. After 680 hours, let's say that again, 680 hours of free-to-view content from the start of MacBytes After Hours, it's time for a new way of making it work. And if you have already signed up, and I know many of you have, a huge thank you from both of us, and we'll see you on Friday night. But that's it for this episode of MacBytes. As always, we would love to hear from you, so please send your questions, comments and queries by email to thecrew@macbytes.co.uk or use the contact form on the website. We've also got our Discord chat room that's open 24/7. Simply go to macbytes.co.uk/TMC, the MacBytes community, and join the conversation. You can follow MacBytes on Blue Sky, where we're MacBytes. You can follow me personally on Blue Sky, where I'm Elaine Giles.
You can follow me on Blue Sky. My handle is Thomas Mike.
And I'm MacBytes Siri on Blue Sky.
The full links to all those socials are in the show notes. Until next time, this has been Elaine and Mike bringing you MacBytes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye and see you next time.
I'm not happy.
I can see that.
Not happy at all.
What's your problem?
Timmy.
What's he done now?
Nothing.
Nothing?
That's right, nothing.
So why are you not happy then?
Because he should have done something.
Something like what?
Something like visiting MacBytes HQ and giving me cuddles like he did with Pikachu.
You mean you're jealous?
Yes.
Of a Pokemon character?
Yes.
So you mean you'd welcome a cuddle from Timmy?
Well, I think it's the least he can do.
Why?
Because working here is stressful.
I know it is, but would a cuddle in a huddle with Timmy make it any better?
Probably not.
So why do you want one then?
Because it would drive her absolutely crazy, of course.
You're not wrong there.
Now hold my case while I zip this Pokemon suit up and call Timmy. This is happening whether he likes it or not.